The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2013 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2013. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the internet. To find out more about ACCS, or to order additional conference talks, visit our website at accsedu.org. Look for the Conferences tab. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
We'll go ahead and begin. Our panel today is going to be discussing the transition from the grammar stage to the logic stage, so I'll let our panelists introduce themselves, and they've got some prepared material for you. And then we'll be taking questions. Please put your questions on an index card, and I'll be around to pick them up and deliver them to the panelists. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Leslie Collins. I'm the head of school at Covenant Academy. I wanted to talk about the opportunity that we have as we transition our students from grammar to logic. I wanted to start with the reminder that we are made in the image of God, who is infinitely complex. God is the Alpha and the Omega. He is the prophet, priest, and king. Jesus is the prophet, priest, and king. And yet, he came as a child. And so what we see is a complexity. We are many things all at the same time. And I think that's important to us to remember when we are looking at our young students. They are complex. We might think of them as grammar students, and they may be, but they are becoming something. As Christians, we are becoming more like Christ. We are constantly in process. And God moves us through stages in our lives, usually challenging stages, to bring us more and more into the image of Christ and to transform our minds and the way that we live. And so our students should be brought through a process in the same way so that they are becoming more and more what they are supposed to become. And everything that we do begins with that end in mind, that they are becoming that rhetoric student who will become that quadrivium student, who will become a lifelong learner, who will become an active warrior in the kingdom of God, in the culture war for God's glory. So I think that's important to remember. I think it's very, very important to remember that the developmental process for each student is individual. You cannot make all of your sixth graders be at the same level. If you seek to teach them logic, and many schools do, and that's fine, you must understand that many of them developmentally are not that at that level. And so I think it's wise to keep that in mind as you're considering the processes that you choose. So the school, though, cannot make an individual schedule for each child's development. So you have to have some corporate process involved in allowing for individual development. So I think what you do is you develop cultural and pedagogical infrastructure in the culture, the cultural liturgy of your school, the way that you live out everything that you believe as a school. And in doing that, you allow each child to develop and to transition successfully into what you are seeking to help them become. So, for instance, I'd like to remind you that grammar students need several things. I've listed them, and I will read them and just explain them to you. Grammar students need effective instruction in the language of each subject so that they are able to move towards Socratic instruction. We are seeking to get them toward roundtable discussions, toward engaging in lively debates, but if you think that will come without very hard work in starting in kindergarten of defining terms and clarifying definitions, you are mistaken. Socratic instruction is a lot of work that is the fruit of labors that came beforehand. So that begins in kindergarten. Essentially, what I'm suggesting is that your transition from grammar to logic begins in kindergarten. Effective instruction is also needed in how to be a successful student, how to manage time, how to take notes, how to study. That begins in kindergarten. That begins in first grade. That begins with a 15-minute recess. Sweetie, you have 15 minutes to use the bathroom. And when the 15 minutes are up, you have to have used the bathroom and you have to play it so hard that you're sweating. And then I want you to come in with that shirt tucked in. That is study habits. That's time management. That starts then. I believe that in general what is wise in rearing children is to give a gradual increase in freedom with an understood increase in responsibility each year. We want to see our influence increase and our oversight decrease as the children grow. That's what we seek to do as parents. And so we want to see the same thing for our students. And so when you are looking at what you do for kindergartners, it should look very distinctly different than what you do for fifth graders and what you do for sixth graders. And ultimately, it should be worlds apart from what your logic school students are doing and your rhetoric school students are doing. You want to see a gradual separation, not a one day you are a grammar student and the next day you are a logic student or in September you're a logic student. You want to see a gradual separation from the grammar school and an expectation of leadership among lower grades with each school year. What I mean by that is, and again, this refers to the cultural liturgy, the way that you are living out what you believe in your school. If you believe that students really do well to learn in leadership through servant leadership, as many schools do, for instance, at lunchtime, our students have specific chores, specific tasks that they must do to clean up the lunchroom after everyone has had their lunch. And each grade has a specific job. And if they don't do it, then we have them come out of class and clean that up again. But we have clearly and carefully and strategically assigned different tasks that we believe are age appropriate for different grades. That starts in sixth and seventh grade. When sixth and seventh grade are not available, we specifically say to fifth grade, we're asking you to be the leaders now because they're on a field trip or they're away or they're not available. We need you to step up to the plate. And they go, we're so excited. You're asking us to do a big person job. I think that's very important. And also, as you are seeking give them increased responsibility, I think to gradually introduce them and invite them and excite them about being part of the logic school. I doubt that I am the only administrator who struggles to see families keep the vision for classical education all the way through. What you want to do is create a sticky school, a school that nobody wants to leave because they just can't get away. It's so wonderful to be there. And so if you have ways of bringing students in culturally, enculturating them up through the grammar school to say, I can't wait till I get to do that. I can't wait till I get to do that. And you slowly invite them in. For instance, this is a silly thing. But in Texas, particularly in Houston, we have very fond feelings for snow because we never have it. And so when they hear of hot chocolate and snowball fights and they hear music, they just get all excited and emotional, and it'll never happen for us. So I had a snowball fight, staff versus students. I surprised them. They didn't know. I took the logic school into the courtyard, and I told them we were about to have a snowball fight. Well, it was with giant marshmallows. It was very fun. It was good for the logic students. The grammar students were informed, their teachers were informed, that they were to watch from the inside of their classroom as we were in the courtyard looking crazy. And the sixth graders, who are our transitioning grade, were allowed to be the judges. That was all very intentional. Everybody wanted to be out in the courtyard. And that is one way of trying to bring into your cultural liturgy, living out what you believe, of creating that sticky school. That's just a silly thing, but it helps, I hope. So that is one area of intentional exposure to the logic and the rhetoric school. Another is when you have a gathering. I have specific gatherings only for my high school students, all eight of them, so that my students in grammar school will say, well, I want a bonfire. I want to have a bonfire. I want a pool party. I want to stay for that. You mean if I stay for high school, I become the high school that has the pool party? Well, yeah, well, that's what we do when we talk about Socrates, because that's what you do at pool parties. And they're very excited about that. And so the point is that you give them gradual exposure. Well, they knew that it was a great honor on the last day of school to be invited to that last day pool party celebration with the high school students. So the students who just graduated from sixth grade were invited to that, and they thought that they had died and gone to heaven. That's one of those ways of increasing that exposure. I think that one of the most important things is to increase also your expectations of what you want from them and how they conduct themselves on the campus. I believe that we should be saying to them, it is my job to trust you and your job to be trustworthy. So I'm not going to remind you to tuck in your shirt because you are already reminding yourself. I shouldn't have to at this age because I want you to have freedom and I want you to live within that freedom. I think that as you communicate that way to students, as they transition into the older grades, you develop trust with them and you develop respect and they start to realize that you are treating them like an adult. So I think that that is important as we watch them grow. I think it's important for us as schools to remember that God has a pattern of design of development for these students. It is his design and his process. And as Bodhi Bakum said, we can't rush that. Much of what we rush is our own pride speaking. So don't rush your students to develop too quickly into logicians and rhetoricians. They will go when they're ready. And just set up a system so that they can walk through that with confidence and know that it's exciting and they can't wait to be there. But make sure that your curriculum sets itself up and sets those students up for success. I do think that the primary reason that parents and students and teachers experience frustration during the transition years of grammar school to logic is because we don't recognize that developmental process. We want to rush it. We are not preparing our students. We are not preparing our school. We are not setting them up for success. We're setting them up for failure. And then we're confused as to why everyone is stressed out. When parents consistently come to you and tell you that your students in sixth grade, fifth grade, seventh grade, or eighth grade are stressed out, you should look at that as an opportunity to say, and where should we have fixed it? Because it's not eighth grade. It's probably fourth grade. So those are just some initial thoughts, and I know that my colleagues have excellent thoughts as well.
My name is Ron Gilley. I'm from Trinitas Christian School down in Pensacola, Florida. I very much like Miss Leslie. I wanted to say that, you know, every student's a little bit different, and so we're not going to be able to reduce this to a formula. But the same thing holds true for classes. You know, this year's sixth grade class may be quite ready for seventh grade, but next year's class is not quite as mature in their thinking. So what holds true for individual students sort of works the same way in the classes, because, you know, every classroom's got their own, every class has their own chemistry. So it sort of works both ways there. I want to talk about two different things. Number one, in the classroom, and then I want to come back and talk just a little bit about the culture. I'm training leadership within the culture, building community, and training leadership by building community. The first thing in the classroom, we begin to try to stretch students' brains a little bit in the fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, by going ahead and talking about relationships between particulars, which is pretty much a logic stage skill. But we go ahead and push it a little bit. Now, we're not trying to push them into the logic stage, but imagine teaching a fellow everything there is to know about a fishing rod and everything that there is to know about fishing, but never letting him go fishing. Now, we want to teach our students, I mean, they're good, solid grammar students. We want to teach them all the parts of the fishing rod, and we want them to memorize all of the fishing terms. But we want to let them make a few casts as well, okay? So nothing too heavy, but we're going to stretch their brains just a little bit. One way we do that, just practically speaking, is in the history class, we'll talk about how last week's lesson leads to this week's lesson and how this week's lesson is going to set up next week's lesson. So they can begin to see, we may not be testing them on these relationships between these particulars, but they can at least begin to see that there are some relationships between the particulars. We had a sixth grade teacher once who had this great visual that helped the students understand this. The first day of school, the first day of the history class every year, she took these dominoes, and on the back of the dominoes, she wrote the title for every history lesson. And then she set those dominoes up in this pattern. And it wasn't just a straight line. It was this pattern that branched out, okay? And so she she talked to them about how each event in history leads to not only another event, but many other events. And then she knocked the first domino over, and it just went out in this branching pattern, just gave the students a visual for what she'd been telling them. So I think that's something like that is very helpful. In literature, another sort of a practical thing here, we're always trying to teach other subjects. You know, we're all about integration and classical, and so when I teach literature, I'm trying to teach writing and grammar at the same time. And one thing in particular that students going from the grammar to logic stage have some trouble with is figuring out how to get their ideas across in a sort of a cohesive way. What I tell my writing students is, before you ever sit down to write anything, you need to have a picture in your head that you want to write about. Develop a picture of what you want to write. Now, your goal is to choose the right words and to string them together in the exact right structure and in just the right way to get the picture that's in your head into the reader's head. So when we're reading our literature books together, I look for those passages that I know the author has done a particularly good job there. And so I begin to ask students, okay, what picture are you getting in your head when you read this? And they're going to all have a pretty similar picture. So I'm able to integrate that and show them, you know, how those things are working together. And of course, structure, the grammar there. The other thing that we do in literature, of course, is ask them to you know, we stop frequently and say, what do you think is going to happen next? What do you think is going to happen next based on what we've read today? What do you think this character is going to do now? And it's fun to see them wrestle with that. And, you know, a fifth grader, most of the time they're not going to get it right, but we're letting them pick up the rod and make a few casts, and every once in a while they predict right. And so we're just letting them try the tool out a little bit. The other thing that we do, and this is something that I do in my parent-teacher conferences, parents want to know, what can I do? Because they stress out about moving to that next stage a lot of times. Because their students one day are sitting in these little desks and they're singing songs and doing chants and rhymes, and the next day they're sitting on leather sofas and they're reading the Iliad, and you know, it's very different. And so the parents get more stressed out, I think, at our school than the students do. And so they say, what can we do? Ask your students what they think and why they think what they think. So when your child comes in, and Doug Wilson talked about this morning when he was talking about the music, students say, oh, I love that band. Well, why? Because they're cool. Well, what makes them cool? So the next question is, what makes them cool? So getting them to begin to think, to ask themselves why they think what they think. And again, don't expect them to have the answer. They don't have the answer. They don't know why they think it's cool, but they need to start thinking about that. So we're just starting to stretch their thinking just a little bit. In Latin, we do some of this by doing a lot of oral translation. So in our exercises in class, especially fifth and sixth grade, because they're getting a lot of verb tenses in our sequence of the way we teach Latin, they're getting a lot of verb tenses that they haven't even dealt with in English yet. And so, you know, they're sitting here looking at this long translation, and they're dealing with the difference between the pluperfect tense and the perfect tense and the imperfect tense, and they don't even have a good handle on why the three are different, and now they've got to figure out how to use them to determine time in this paragraph. And so we do a lot of talking through that. We're putting sentences on the board, and everybody gets a turn in the hot seat. Not only do I want you to translate this sentence orally, but I want you to talk me through it. So basically the student's teaching the class as they go through this translation. We give them a large translation to work on each quarter, written work that they do on their own, and then we test them orally on that. We ask them to defend that. So, you know, there's a passage in there. We ask them to parse this word. Oh, that's in the accusative case. Why is it in the accusative case? It looks like it's the object of a preposition. Oh, well, it's in the accusative case because the verb shows motion. So they're not carrying grain in the camp. They're not in the camp carrying grain around. They're carrying grain into the camp. That's tough for a fifth or sixth grader to get, but we're asking them to start to wrestle with those sorts of things. And not so much, when I say we test on that, it's a super small thing. You wouldn't want a logic question like that to sink a student. It's a small part of the grade, but we're asking them to do that sort of thing. The other piece is organization. Leslie mentioned you've got a 15-minute time period, and this is what you have to accomplish in that 15-minute time period. And obviously, we all do that with our students. We do it, too, with binders. I'm sure you all have some sort of a system that you demand your students keep in the binders, and so our training looks like that. Up to fourth grade, you've got a grammar binder, and in the front of it should be jingles, and then right behind that there's a divider, and then there should be your reference section, and behind that is a workbook, and behind that is those are your graded papers, your tests and your quizzes, and everything has a place, and you put everything in a place. Well, starting in about the fifth grade, they have to learn that that's also true with thought. So they've been able to do it hands-on, put everything in its place, have a place for everything, put everything in its place. Now they've got to begin to organize their thoughts. And so the way we teach history, for example, on Monday I'll go in and I'll give this lecture where I give them all of the juicy details, all of the crazy things about the characters that, you know, would never ask them to recall on a test. But I tell them everything I can find out about it. On Tuesday, I come back and I give them a pared-down lecture that's what I really want them to know. And then I give them an outline as I'm giving that lecture on the second day. And what I'm trying to teach them there is this is what, once you know how to take notes, this is what you would have written down yesterday from the lecture that I gave you. So they're sort of learning to organize their thought that way. The second part of this is, and this is, I think, maybe where we differ from some schools, is culture. We work really, really, really hard to build community at our school and training leaders to take that place in that community. And Leslie talked a good bit about this, so we may not be very different from them. But we're asking them to be responsible to something other than themselves, and we're trying to grow them into that. And so we start very early on with building relationships within the whole student body, the older students and the younger students. And I think a good many schools sort of segregate and keep students segregated, and we don't want that. We want our 11th and 12th graders with our kindergartners and our first graders. And so we purposefully create situations where they can be together. And once that gets going, they want to be together. I mean, of course, the little ones want to be with the older ones, but the older ones, they want to be with the little ones too. And so it gives these little guys a picture of what they're growing into. So not only do they have like this cool older brother or older sister now, but they begin to see as they get a little bit older, hey, that's going to be me one day. I'm going to be a leader in this school, and I'm going to have to be doing what they're doing. And so once they start to get a little older, we give them some reins. The fourth graders, fifth graders, sixth graders start to get more responsibility. The older you get, the more responsibility you get. The fifth graders at our school have to take take care of the K-5 students at lunch. They sit with them. They help them unpack their lunches, microwave their lunches, teach them table manners. They help them clean up their tables, clean up their messes, put away their lunch boxes, go to the restroom with them to keep them from falling into foolishness. And I know that's a crazy thought. Five-year-olds never fall into foolishness in the restroom. And so that sort of gives them that picture of what they're going to be doing as they get older. The fifth graders take care of the five-year-olds, and the sixth graders take care of the four-year-olds. So that extra year on them, now they have to take care of a year younger student. Basically, what we try to teach them is it's not about you. You've got to die to yourself to find your place in this community. And so that's what we're trying to teach them there. And that while that's not an academic thing, it's a maturity thing. And so the more responsibility they're able to realize and they're able to handle, the more mature their thinking is going to be. Again, all students are different. All classes are different. And so I think a lot of this boils down to communication between teachers. So especially 5th through 8th grade teachers doing a lot of talking all the time. Because a 7th grade teacher may be able to teach that Socratic method class, we call it Traditio, at a very high level this year, where there's lots of discussion and there's lots of logical thinking going on. Next year the class may be different, and we may not be able to get them there. And so that teacher's going to have to be paring that down, and there's going to have to be more grammar instruction. They're going to have to be really purposeful about drawing them out. You got to have the right person in there doing that, but it comes down to lots of communication because they're just all different.
Thank you. I'm Cindy Waters from Cary Christian School in Cary, North Carolina, and I've been teaching sixth grade math there for roughly 9 years. We tend to have about 66 to 70 sixth graders every year. So in our area, sixth grade is our break for middle school. So what we find is sometimes we have an exodus from the fifth grade students who are our downstairs Cary Christian School students to go to larger schools, larger public schools in the area or other schools. We also have almost a mass influx of students either coming from the home school environment or coming from the public school wanting to come in to our facility. The way our building is structured, it's a two-story building with two wings on each floor. So K through 2 is on one hall, 3 through 5 on the next, 6 through 8 is upstairs, and then 9 through 12. So for a lot of students coming from CCS, even though they may have been there since kindergarten, coming upstairs is just a really big deal. It's a physical move. A lot of the students really have never been upstairs. They don't know the faculty. They don't know the administration. Parents feel very anxious about that because they have not developed the relationships with those faculties. So there's somewhat of a heightened sense of, is my child going to make it? And there's just a lot of, there's excitement, but also nervousness. And we also want to make a really good transition for those students who have not been within our community and culture to have a good experience. So we somewhat look at sixth grade as this is our transition year. And we liken it to a trampoline, and we want everybody bouncing and having a really good time. And we know there's going to be kids that are going to fall off that trampoline, but we're going to put them right back on. We're just not going to let them say, I'm done, I don't want to bounce anymore. Too much bouncing, whatever. No, get right back on. We're all having fun up here. And try to make that as positive of an experience as it is, you know, as possible. The two types of students that I think parents get the most anxious about is if it's their eldest child coming up and they've never had a student come upstairs, or if they have an organizationally struggling student. Which tends to be more boys than girls. And I think that that speaks to the development of where most girls are at this point of their development versus boys. In our downstairs, all the work goes home every Monday in a nice little folder pulled by the teachers and assistants. So the parents are very used to seeing all of their students' work at any given time. Sixth grade, we start having them be responsible for maintaining an organized binder in their locker and showing their parents the work as it comes home daily, which is a difficult concept for some students. I wanted to try to just be very practical. I've probably seen about 700 kids transition over the last 9 years or so. So I just wanted to give some practical things that we have found that have worked over the years. Starting with just the open house, and we've somewhat tweaked this in the last year or so. We used to just have one large open house, but what happened was the prospective families didn't really have access to the teachers, and the current families wanted to see the teachers, and they didn't. There was just too many people everywhere, and everybody wanted to come see sixth grade. So what we have done, which really has worked well, is we've started having more of a sixth grade general information session in our auditorium, and then a breakout session for existing families to go back to the classroom area and meet just on a very brief situation with each one of the teachers. We tend to team teach. We've done three teachers in a very close little circle. So they go from basically having one teacher through fifth grade in a self-contained classroom. Sixth grade, because it's the transition, we only have three now because we've brought up Latin into sixth grade. They have a fourth. But then once they hit seventh grade, they hit five teachers. So we're on a different schedule. We try to just make things a little bit of a more safe environment. It's a transition year, and so we just want to make sure that they transition well. By the time they hit about January, they should be fully transitioned, and we see just a huge change in demeanor and just excitement and readiness for the rest of middle school. We have an existing family open house now, and we actually did that just during the school time period. We used to do it at night and have people come. And this year we just said, let's just do it during the school day. And that was very successful. I think that that's what we're going to continue to do. Some of the new families then, we had two different ways that they could come to the school. One was a prospective open house in October, very early on, just look at the school. And then we had another one in January that was much more detailed, when they could re-enroll or enroll. Lots of tours and observations. We have people coming through the school, you know, daily practically. My classroom doors are always open. People can come in, spend the day in sixth grade just to see what things look like, and we have a lot of families that choose to do so. And then the night before school starts, we do a big open house with, we give the students some homework, and that homework is basically to get their notebook organized in a fashion that we would like it to be in. Some of the increased expectations and responsibilities that we have is, we just found that taking the time to train really pays off, and telling them, you know, we have to instruct them, how do you keep an organized binder? Because before then, everything just could go back in their desk, and every now it's going to their locker, and it's moving, and there's backpacks and everything else involved. So just trying to make sure, we even inspect lockers to make sure, you know, occasionally if you don't inspect it, you get what you inspect, not what you expect. And so we have found sometimes just opening all the lockers and saying, you lose recess today until you can figure out how to get your locker more manageable and get your papers filed. That tends to be very effective, especially with the boys, because they love recess. One of the things that we do give them each is a planner, a little agenda book, and they, from sixth grade through 12th, they get the same one. I think the seniors may get more of a leatherette covered one, but everyone gets the same agenda. And we trade them how you keep up with assignments on a weekly basis. So we have small whiteboards posted in our room, and we take time every Monday just to set out the entire week and help them plan their assignments and when they should know what is expected of their week. And that has worked really well to give them that time. Also, they're trying to learn how to balance all their extracurriculars. This is the first time that they're going to have electives. This is when they can play sports. We want to see them getting involved in the culture of the school, so we want them to take risks, run for a student government association, try a new sport maybe that they've never done before, use middle school to have those times of trying new things so that by the high school level, you're more accomplished and able to maybe compete at a higher level or get more involved in leadership. Logistics, for a sixth grader, when we say, what is the best thing about sixth grade? They say having a locker. In our school, that is just a really, really big deal to go from having a cubby to having a locker. So sixth graders get all excited about a locker. Some of the girls decorate, like, you know, HGTV with little wallpaper and everything else. But that's pretty exciting for them. We try to communicate as much to parents. We have RenWeb as our software. So our plans are out on RenWeb. And we also try to communicate as much as we can to parents on a hard copy if something needs to go home, as well as to a student. We just feel like if it's written down, it has a better chance of getting communicated correctly. Our journey, we want to mentor the adolescents and give them an attitude of service. I will say that middle school is not necessarily a very pretty time. If you like a real nice, perfect, wonderful, clean everything, middle school may not be it for you, but we actually like it to get a little messy, and I don't want to say we like the students to fail, but we want them to start trying things and standing on their own two feet. And if they fail, we want to be their safety net to train them, you know, what could you have done differently to have a better outcome? So there are office visits involved, and sometimes it's not always pretty. But when you see, we feel like we're just planting seeds at that level. And really, when you start seeing the graduates is when you start seeing the fruit on that tree. You know, you want to have that joy in the journey going through with the middle schoolers and just taking the time to develop relationships. I know I had a student recently who, she's in college now and she's a math major, and I was at a basketball game. I decided I would go watch some of the sixth grade girls play basketball. And her sister was playing, and I saw her approach me, but I just thought she was coming up into the stands to talk to somebody else. I mean, I have not maintained a relationship with her since I had her in sixth grade. And she came up to me personally and said, she sat down right next to me on the bleacher and said, I want to let you know I'm majoring in math. And it just really, really touched me, because here was someone, you know, a lot of it is building those relationships and having a mentoring relationship. The reality is you will have struggling students. There's some just developmentally who are not really prepared for middle school, or who are coming from an environment that did not give them the same background. And so sixth grade can be a real struggle time. We try to encourage them to get help if they need to get help. A lot of our high school students are tutors, and we try to put a boy with a boy and a girl with a girl and provide a really strong mentor of a successful student that can come alongside them for potentially years and have a really good relationship. We also just encourage them to work heartily as unto the Lord, that it's not for the grade, and that if they are working to the best of their God-given capabilities, then that is enough, and they should be content with that. And we offer study halls, math help, and again, tutoring. The new student, I would say, just sometimes takes a lot of TLC. Some new students will adjust within that first week, and everything will be great. I've had some students that it took a year, and things were not really great, and they were having a very difficult time. I saw it with my own children. My children came to Cary Christian in second grade and fifth grade. The later you waited to come, just the harder it was to adjust. And so for those, especially if there aren't many new students that year, typically we have 7 to 12 new students a year. But some years, just economy, or if we don't have much turnover, we may only have one slot and they may be a new student by themselves. So trying to just find out, one of the teachers does a survey of their hobbies and their love language, and just find out how do they best get affirmed. Is it words of affirmation? Is it just a touch? Would they like a hug? Those kinds of things can go a long way with getting a new student to adjust to middle school. Also, maybe identifying some good friends. Sometimes the parents wonder, you know, why is my child not getting involved in everything? And it is a close-knit community. So sometimes as a new student, they have to be the one reaching out to invite others in. And so sometimes the parents will ask, is this a good relationship? Is this somebody that my child, you feel like, is a good fit? And so those conversations are helpful to have with those parents. Some of the things that to try to anticipate the needs of some of the family members. Usually they're most concerned about your eldest. And once the eldest has come through, the anxiety levels go way down. And they're just really excited then when they have more and more children go through. The struggling or the new student, the disorganized is a big deal. And for some boys especially, we've seen that that's a continuum that somewhat evolves from sixth through eighth grade, but we want to make sure that when they get into the high school level, that they are functioning very organized. One of the things that we found out that has been great parental involvement and just having people get involved in the school is having grading helpers. I don't have an assistant in the class, and so by teaching 70 kids math, I just can't grade them all. So we invite other parents, and that's a great way for them to not only have an ear and they can hear what's going on in the classroom that their student may be in, but also just kind of see what really is going on with me as a teacher and the dynamic of the students together. And that's been a real blessing just to me. I've had some moms, I had three already come to me, because I usually get five a year, and three have already come to me saying, you get another one of my kids, I want Monday. So that's just been a huge blessing to see them get involved like that. We encourage the students to get involved, drama, chorus, sports, other electives, just get involved in the other families that are there. And you know, our goal there is to really invest in others' lives. If all I do is teach math, then I've not done what I need to be doing. So my goal there is to, I've got these kids for a very unique period of time in their development, and I hope to make a difference for Christ for them.
There are several questions here, and one I'm sure that we all can have input into. One was in the nature of how important is it to have sixth graders rotate to specialist classes, such as what Carrie Christian is doing. I think that the approach of having a transition year between all one teacher and five teachers is wise. I would say that in honesty, my preference is to have still one teacher to rule them all in sixth grade. I find my toughest teacher, the one who has just the highest standard possible as I'm seeking to hire and fill that position, someone who is going to see the trouble that they will have in seventh grade and then work on it so that there's no place for them to hide all year, because they tend to do that. They tend to learn the art of hiding as they develop. And so that's I would say someone asked how important it is, that I would say I don't think it's that important, but that's just my preference. They still have a Latin teacher. They have art, music, and PE teachers. But that's just my preference. The other is, there's an excellent question. What types of events or activities do you purposefully offer to ensure that grammar students spend time with upper school students? I'm sure we all have input on this. Is it a buddy-type relationship, older paired with younger, or a general gathering? I confess that I resist over-organizing relationships, because I just think it's too tempting to have to be irked by someone that you're supposed to really like. And so I prefer just an organic relationship. The way that I do it at our school, the way that we set it up is twofold. One, all of our logic students are tasked, our high school students, forgive me, seventh through eighth and ninth graders at this point, our oldest students are tasked to specifically go to recess, the last 10 minutes of the grammar school recess, to love on those kids. Their task is to find the child who is playing alone and play with them, bring them into the group. If there is a student who's having a relational struggle with other students, as happens, their task is to be the popular person that is the glue for that lonesome dove. That is one way, just an organized, and then it gives those older students 10 minutes where they get to be silly and be leaders and have fun, and it's a wonderful opportunity. And then what you see is at the end of the day, parents will say, well, how does my kindergartner know that high school student? And as they're running up and holding their hand, because as was said earlier, just we want to have relationships that are real, and we don't want segregation at our school between the ages. So recess is one way. Athletics, also, we have our students starting in fifth grade play up into middle school sports, but that's mostly because we're a very small school, and that's a function of our small size. However, sixth graders are able to play into those sports, so that athletics is an opportunity. We have, I didn't mention the second way regarding having the students, I said that one was just with the recess, but the other is with our house system. So I'm sure that you all have heard of a house system. It doesn't involve Dumbledore or a hat or Quidditch. It's just an opportunity to organize social groups within your school so that as soon as someone comes into our school, we induct them into a house, regardless of their grade. So students at all grades are in our house, and you automatically have a people group that you belong to. And then every Friday for chapel, we divide into our houses and sing the doxology together, and those are your people. You are identified with them. And that is a tremendous symbolic and very real way of having our students interact with older students. Did you want to take one of your others?
There's several questions here about what's the proper way to do note-taking, how do we train for note-taking. We do a lot with the outline in fifth and sixth grade, but it's not because we think the outline is the only way to take notes. It's because it teaches that there is a hierarchy of information and that the information's got to be ordered. We would leave it to the seventh grade teacher to teach how they want the students to take notes. It's, you know, the style of teaching doesn't always lend itself to an outline. If it does, that's a preferred method, but the teacher needs to control that. It needs to be whatever way they can give the student to keep that information in a hierarchy. One of the things that we have a lot of success with, or have had a lot of success with in seventh grade, is having students write summaries after, for example, a book of the Iliad. Write a summary on this book, and that helps them organize the information in their minds. And so it's helpful for the Iliad, but it's helpful for them going forward, too, just in maturing their thought processes about how they, you know, here they have gotten this whole chapter of a book in, how would they spit that back out in a summary? So, again, we leave that mostly to the teacher, but my outline's a really good place to start early.
Okay, one of the questions was, do you teach how to use a planner and then check it, and are parents involved in the planner? We do teach how to use the planner. When they get a planner, most of them have never seen that before in their lives. Maybe they see a parent have one, or maybe they have a family calendar. But they've probably never had a planner, and if they lose it, they get one. So, and they all look alike. So we train them. You put your name on it. You put your student number. You put your home address. You put your phone number. Any way that this is going to get back to you, you need to have that in there because they all look alike. So we start out at the very beginning of the year training them how to fill out from our whiteboards and take the time for questions, make sure we're all on the same page in the planner, which is a benefit of having the same planner for every child. So we do spend some time, you know, more training at the beginning of the year with that. As the year progresses, we expect them to bring the planner every day to class. So we may just say, take out your planner, and it's expected that they will have it in with them. One of the things that we do in their locker before they start, because their locker is such the exciting thing to have in sixth grade, is we put in their locker what to take to every class, including pencils, erasers, everything, per teacher, per class, so that they don't get to a class. And we're very closely, we're at the end of the hall, we're three doors right at each other, form a little triangle. So it's not like they have to go very far. So they know to bring their planner every day, so if plans do change, you can say, you know what, I'm moving the quiz from Wednesday to Thursday. Take out your planner, cross it out from Wednesday, move to Thursday. Some of the kids come up with very elaborate systems for their planner. My daughter had, you know, every color highlighter that meant partially studied, studied enough for quiz level, not studied enough for test level, have 3 days out. You know, but she understood how that all worked for her. My son, not so much, but he still figured it out. So we don't want to necessarily micromanage how they do all that, because I do want to give them some flexibility. But we do want them getting used to keeping up with their assignments in an organized fashion. One of the questions was, are the parents involved with that? There's a couple things that we've done for those who struggle. Sometimes if a parent just says, listen, it is not getting in the planner, it's not coming home, I don't know what to do. Because we use RenWeb and our plans are required to be on RenWeb, they can download RenWeb. And a lot of parents get into the habit of printing out RenWeb on the weekend, posting it on a certain place on their refrigerator so that they know the plan for the week. Now, if you don't have the software, you probably still have plans. So whether you provide certain students a hard copy of your plan for the week, you know, I would be willing to do that for a parent who requested it. Some parents have actually come and said, I want Billy to come to you every day at the end of the day, and you check off that he has written for one on Monday, he has everything that you have on your board in your planner, and you initial it. And has he turned certain work in? If he has, you can initial it that he has checked, you know, checked it off. So we're willing to do that. Now, we can't do that for 70, but usually 70 aren't struggling. It's maybe two or three that really need that level of attention. So keeping in close communication with the parents, and by then you've probably had a parent-teacher conversation or a conference set up. So those are the parents and the students that you work a little bit more closely with that.
The question is, do we require anything of the Rising Logic students over the summer or do anything with them? I think this is an excellent idea. I would like to require a lot of things over the summer. So I have a number. We have some various activities, a nature camp for them to volunteer as and learn leadership skills at their desire. Camp Invention, which is a science and math camp, just opportunities for them to grow, but not nearly as much as I should be doing. I don't know about my colleagues and the other schools. I think it's a great idea. I think book clubs would be fabulous. Our school is still very small and growing, so those things are off in a distance. This is another question. We are a school growing, still growing a grade each year, I hear you. We have combined classes, I'm sorry. What advice do you have for the wide maturity range issues in a combined class? That is really hard. I honestly mean this, I'll pray for you. I think that the best thing to do in that kind of a situation is to have very clear expectations. I think the clearer your expectations are and the more definition, the longer your definition of what you expect of them, the better. Because ambiguity for them is darkness. So I would avoid any hint of ambiguity. So when you say the paper is due on Monday, it needs to be due on Monday, and that means there needs to be a consequence for it not being turned in on Monday. Now, the maturity of the class, I don't know if you're speaking of the maturity between 7th and 8th, 7th, 8th, and 9th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th, I don't know. 5th, 6th, okay. Well, okay, so that is not as hard because they're still hanging on to that grammar a little bit. And so I would just suggest that you work very, very closely in the organizational communication with parents. If you don't have RenWeb, then utilize email so that they know exactly what's going on and utilize the planner so that the students know what's going on and make sure that everyone is communicating as a team and that the students recognize that they're part of that team.
Question is about how to keep parents focused and understanding, how to help them understand the transition from the grammar to logic stages. There's one good answer for that: get them in the classroom. One of the things that we really spend a lot of time talking to parents about is you have to have a vision for where your child is going. You've got to have a vision for where your child is going. Ideally, we have visiting parents in our upper school classrooms because we want them to see where we're taking these students. And so once a parent's been over, and that, by the way, is what creates the stress, too, for the parents of fifth and sixth graders. But once they've been over there, once they've been in the classroom a couple of times, they've seen the game being played, they've got a pretty good idea of what their student is going to have to be ready for, and they'll want it. If you're doing it well, they're going to want it. So that's the good part. You're whetting their appetite, but the other thing is they're going to be nervous about it and they're going to be asking a lot of questions. The good that comes out of that is they'll have them ready. You know, they'll be doing what they need to do at home. Get them in the classroom.
Okay, one of the questions was, can you give examples of increasing freedom in 5th, 6th, and up? Our downstairs runs very, very smoothly, and it is a well-oiled machine. And because of the training and the discipline that they have downstairs, we reap the benefits upstairs in the middle school. But there comes a point in time. So, and by sixth grade, most of them are ready to be free of some of that level of discipline and oversight. So it can be small things. Generally, the smaller students, when they go outside to recess, they're in a line, girls in front, boys in the back, which we still do upstairs. But they may not speak until they're outside. Things like, you know, we walk in an orderly way. It may not be a perfectly straight line. Our hands might not be perfectly down by our sides. And we may have quiet conversation. That goes a long way with a budding teenager. In carpool, the majority of middle schoolers sit on our canopy side, which is where our third through fifth graders are picked up. They maintain a silent carpool until a certain point in carpool. We allow the middle schoolers the freedom to chat. Again, quietly, they can't be up, you know, passing a football in carpool. We don't want accidents to happen. But they can sit there quietly and have some time with their friends. And again, when the fifth graders are looking at the sixth graders having that as a privilege, they cannot wait for it. So they want to be a sixth grader. And they see that as just being a huge amount of freedom. And then having electives and being able to play sports or we have a secondary chorus that was very, very small for many, many years, maybe 6 to 8 girls. We had 2 football players, one of which was my son, decide to join chorus this year as seniors, or they joined it last year as juniors. And the chorus now jumped to about 70 to 100 students. Boys and girls, it became just a glorious activity. It's been so rich to watch that develop. But for years and years and years, it was not that way. So a sixth grader can be a part of that because it's open to all secondary students. We have not had sixth graders do that. I think that may be a little intimidating. But by seventh grade, we have had boys and girls join chorus or take part in a play, drama. So there just becomes more opportunity to get involved in some of the culture of campus. And I think that they all look forward to that as they look at the older students.
If you didn't have your question answered, we're happy to answer that up here.